Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Playoff baseball. Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. And I'll tell you, we had a game already today that did not disappoint. The Atlanta Braves taking game one of the NLDS in thrilling fashion, knocking off the Marlins 9-5. That was a thriller earlier today. If you like offense, if you like emotional swings, then this game was right up your alley. Opening inning, Ronald Acuna goes yard over the right field wall, 1-0 Atlanta. The Marlins answer back with a solo shot of their own in the second inning from Miguel Rojas. 1-1, we go to the third, and then the Marlins take a 4-1 lead, but the Braves answer back. I mean, it was just a thrilling game throughout. 4-4, bottom of the seventh inning. This happens.
Swinging away, deep center field, back towards the wall. Sierra at the track. It's gone! Travis D'Arno delivers, and the Braves have taken the lead in the seventh.
Travis D'Arno goes yard, makes it 7-4 Atlanta. The Braves would add a couple of more as Dansby Swanson homered also in the bottom of the seventh inning. And the Marlins would add one in the eighth, but that was it. So Atlanta takes game one 9-5. Again, what a thriller earlier today. And right now we have a dandy going on. Houston already up 1-0 in the ALDS over the Oakland A's. And it's 3-2 Houston as we go to the fifth inning. I'm telling you, this Astros team, they're finding their rhythm. I mean, you take a look at what George Springer has done already. He's got two RBIs in this game as George Springer went yard in the third inning off Manaea. And so the Astros are finding their footing offensively, and that was something that plagued them all year long. I don't think the Astros have the pitching to win a World Series title, but it seems like this team is now focused. I'm telling you, no fans in the stands definitely helps. Playing at a neutral site definitely helps for the Houston Astros. They hold a 3-2 lead right now over the Oakland A's. We'll continue to follow this game throughout the show. Coming up tonight, we have two more games. The Yankees and the Rays will battle it out. Game two of the ALDS. New York takes game one. You know, the saying, the savage Yankees, they look to be back as well. They look good offensively again. Tampa Bay hoping to not fall in an 0-2 hole. An important game tonight, 6:10, that one on TBS. And then we get game one of the Dodgers and the Padres. I was hoping this would be the National League Championship preview, but you have the juggernaut Dodgers against the up-and-coming Padres. It's dangerous. I mean, it's a five-game set. We know what the Padres are capable of offensively. Clevinger will be on the mound for the Padres in tonight's game. That was the prize that they grabbed at the trade deadline. The Dodgers will throw Walker Buehler out for game one. Clayton Kershaw has already been named the starter of game two. And so there is plenty to get into as far as Major League Baseball. Things are really going to heat up by the end of the night. And we have game four of the NBA Finals. We can't forget about that. 7 o'clock tonight, Lakers Heat. Some great news. If you're a Miami Heat fan, game one was depressing, to say the least, because not only did you lose game one, but your team also lost Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic. Now, Dragic is going to be unlikely to play at all in this series. Maybe if it goes to Game 7, there's a chance. I mean, maybe. But the Heat, they will be with Bam Adebayo today. He is going to return for tonight's game. He was listed as questionable. Typically, when you see a player listed as questionable, they're going to come back and play. I don't know if Bam is 100%, but he is better than Myers Leonard. Okay, now, Kelly Olynyk was fantastic in Game 3. And so, I'm curious to see how this plays with rotation. But it's a monumental game. If the Lakers win tonight, this series is over. It's over in five. If the Heat win and they shrink it best 2 out of 3, all of a sudden the heavily favored Lakers, who look like they were going to run away with this series, have a battle on their hands. And so again, game 4 NBA Finals tonight. Tip off for that game is set for 7 p.m. It's one of those nights where, there's just not enough time to watch everything. I mean, playoff baseball is fantastic. We never have to deal with playoff baseball at the same time as the NBA. Like, that never happens. Well, it's going to happen tonight. A lot of playoff baseball games mixed in with the NBA Finals. Outside of that, we'll also take a look today at the NFL. Last night, the Green Bay Packers, they remain unbeaten. I love Matt LaFleur. Love this guy. It's been so much fun. I've actually followed Matt LaFleur during most of his coaching career. I've been able to follow him because he was in Washington, and then he went to college with Notre Dame for a year, really boosted Everett Golson and Deshaun Kizer's stock. Deshaun Kizer probably takes that next step in college because of a year with Matt LaFleur. Then he goes up, becomes the quarterback's coach in Atlanta, does some tremendous work with Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan wins an MVP. Then he goes to Los Angeles, and we see Jared Goff go from looking like a bust his rookie season to a playoff quarterback in his sophomore year. And now he's in Green Bay. He also had a stint with the Tennessee Titans, but now he's in Green Bay, and he's 17-3 as a coach. His first 20 games, 17-3. That puts him in elite company. It's one of the top three starts to any NFL coaching career. So Matt LaFleur is definitely doing some work. Now that we're a month into the NFL season, we'll start to take a look at the entire league. Yesterday, we focused on the dreadful NFC East. We'll take a look around. And I also want to talk about the Miami Dolphins, because Brian Flores, who we cannot question Brian Flores. This guy has done phenomenal work with Miami. They have overachieved. They're overachieving right now. He's going to continue with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has been anything but Fitzmagic. He's going to continue to put Tua Tagovailoa on the bench. Is that the right call? I want to take a look at quarterbacks who have set an entire season, and if there's a method to it. I don't know that there is. I don't know if you look at the sample sizes, I don't know if there's enough to say it's the right thing to do. Like, we know Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre for a long time. Can you really credit that to the quarterback that Aaron Rodgers is today? Because we have seen quarterbacks hold clipboards for an entire season, and it hasn't worked out as well. Is it the right call for Brian Flores, the Miami Dolphins? We'll get into that in just a bit. We're also going to be joined by Josh Mendelson. I want to talk NBA basketball, but we can break from the NBA Finals for just a moment. One of the things that we talk about on this show a lot is the cap, free agency. It's unlike anything in the NBA. It's better than Major League Baseball. It's better than the NFL. NBA free agency is top notch. How did we get to where we're at today? Josh Mendelson has a new book out. It's called The Cap, How Larry Fleischer and Dave Stern Built the Modern NBA. He's going to join us on the show. We got a tremendous one lined up for you. We're going to have a lot of fun today. Plus, we'll bring back the cheer segment, which is brought to you by the Handy Martin Helper. Let's pause for just a moment. Local sports recap is coming up. Josh Mendelson will join us to talk about his book. We'll talk NFL football and continue to update you on the Major League Baseball scoreboard. It's all straight ahead on this edition of Drive Time Sports.
Oakland-born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year.
It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it! Good! And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years!
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarino on KOAL 750 AM.
I love getting authors on the show. Love talking about different topics throughout the world of sports, not just what's happening right now. We've had some real interesting stories as of late. I think this one's going to fall right in line. Perfect timing with the NBA Finals, Game 4 tonight. And when you look at the landscape of the two teams playing in Game 4, well, the Los Angeles Lakers brought LeBron James in via free agency. They may have worked an Anthony Davis deal around trades, but in the same token, once you bring in two players that are max, you've got to get creative with the cap and bringing in vets that can complement those players, right? Working the salary cap. Same thing with the Miami Heat. I mean, they go out and grab Jimmy Butler in the offseason, huge free agent deal. How did we get to this point? The salary cap in the NBA is an institution. And I honestly think that sometimes we take it for granted. I don't know that many people fully understand the cap. It's something that I'm completely fascinated with. And that's why this next guest is going to be, it's going to be a fun conversation, to say the least. We're joined right now over the phone by Josh Mendelson. He's the author of the new book, The Cap, How Larry Flesher and David Stern Built the Modern NBA Around the Salary Cap. I'm sure he's got some great stories, and he's joining us over the phone right now. Josh, it is a pleasure to get you on. Thank you for the time today.
No, thank you so much for having me. I love talking about this stuff.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's fascinating. And so before we dive into the actual context of the book, I have to figure out, I got to learn from you what possessed the spark for you to write this book. Because again, the business side of basketball fascinates me. As far as the salary cap in baseball and football and any other sport, it just doesn't carry the same weight in my mind as it does in the NBA. I've been a student of it for a very long time, and so that's why I'm so fascinated to talk to you. What was it that made you say, okay, I'm going to write this book about the cap?
Well, since you are going in detail, I will too. The truth of the matter is there were a number of transactions. It actually happened when Omer Asik went from the Chicago Bulls to the Houston Rockets, and he signed, and the Rockets had structured, Daryl Morey had structured the deal in such a way that made it impossible for anybody else to match it. And I was like, that's the smartest thing I've ever seen. And Bob Ryan was on Around the Horn and said, well, Moses Malone had more interesting things in his deal 30 years ago. And I realized I had no idea what he was talking about. And I realized that I didn't know anything about NBA history. And so I tried to find a good book about the business side. Because in baseball, you know, if you're a baseball fan, there's Lords of the Realm, there's The Game, there's Marvin Miller's book. There are all of these books about labor and sports and economics that are super available and interesting. The NBA, there was just a huge void. And so, you know, I started to look into it just as an interest. And the more I researched it, the more I found it to be absolutely fascinating and very different from what I expected. And tremendously colorful. I mean, it isn't kind of a straight, the union proposed 2.7 and the NBA proposed 2.2. There's so many characters and so much context that goes into it. So that was basically why I decided to write it.
And you mentioned some of those names, and I'm really looking forward again to diving into it, because the NFL salary cap, in my mind, it's a myth, right? There's so many ways around the NFL salary cap. You may think that a team is close to the cap, and then they restructure a deal, and we're talking about non-guaranteed money to guaranteed money and signing bonuses. In Major League Baseball, look, you have the salary, you have the luxury tax, you want to pay it, great, pay the luxury tax. That's the way it works in Major League Baseball. The NBA has made so many changes to the cap, and they've tried to create this competitive balance over the last 30 years since the cap became a thing back in 1982, so 40 years ago, that it's such a different realm than any other sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of it is that you can call something a salary cap, but what goes into it is different, right? And so what they agreed to in the early 80s is frankly quite different from what it is now. It was much more player-friendly, and certain things that we know of now, an idea of a max salary or a max salary, rookie wage scale, a luxury tax, that wasn't in that agreement. The agreement that they made in the early 80s really basically guaranteed the players a percentage of revenue, which was an issue because you had a number of teams that were not in great shape. It did have a ceiling, but it also provided a number of exceptions that basically allowed free agency to continue to move and continue to be viable, but then also gave some stability to ownership going forward. So it's a slightly different animal. I mean, the NFL one is its own thing, but it's a very different animal than what it is now, in certain.
David Stern obviously plays the central point in this story, and I know we just recently said goodbye to David Stern, who, in my mind, goes down as one of the greatest commissioners in professional sports history. And so when you look at where the NBA is today, obviously, it's not here at this level without David Stern. So if you go back to 1982, let's start at 1982, because, again, this is I guess you could go ahead and call it, not necessarily in the heyday of Magic, but Magic's already won multiple championships. The interest in the league is growing. Magic and Bird coming out of college, moving into the early 80s. I mean, there's some storylines that are developing that will carry the NBA throughout what we now refer to as the golden era. So let's start back in 1982. Let's talk about David Stern and I guess the vision that he had when talking about the cap.
Sure. So, yeah, the book takes place before David Stern is commissioner, kind of like a prequel type thing. And in many ways, you know, he was tremendously visionary. David Stern was negotiating. David Stern saw the future of the NBA in television, in cable television, in marketing, and in international players. Even when he became the commissioner, that was what he said the focal point was. And so he was negotiating with cable operators in the mid-1970s. He's negotiating with HBO. He's negotiating with ESPN. They called it ESP because they didn't even know what to call it then because it was so new. But he knew that that was going to be where the money was going to be. He also believed that there was interest in the NBA. There was going to be interest in the players. They were charismatic. They were the best in the world. There was no reason why the league wouldn't be as popular as it was. So he certainly had a vision as to what was going to happen in terms of television, in terms of marketing, in terms of corporate partnerships. That was also something that was a focal point to him. And so he kind of was, even as he was coming up through the ranks within the NBA, he was really taking aim at the areas of the business, which I didn't expect when I started researching it. And the one thing I will say is that, you know, a lot of this history was new to me. It was things that I didn't know, even being a diehard NBA fan and knowing some of this stuff. But David Stern certainly had a vision as to what he wanted to achieve and what he wanted to accomplish. That seems obvious in retrospect, but absolutely was not at the time.
Again, Josh Mendelson, our guest right now, as we talk about his new book called The Cap, as we talk about, how the NBA actually became where it's at today. I mean, you have to start with the salary cap going back to these negotiations. You mentioned David Stern, prequel, not quite the commissioner. Tell me about Larry O'Brien. This is a name that obviously if you're a basketball fan, you know the name, but do you actually know the importance of Larry O'Brien? And I'm sure if we're talking about a prequel, here's another central figure in the book.
Yeah, so Larry O'Brien was the commissioner of the NBA. Larry O'Brien was not a longtime NBA sports basketball person. Part of the toxic labor relationship that happened in baseball was because the commissioner was such kind of like an avid baseball fan that he just resented the idea that the union existed at all. Larry O'Brien came from politics. Larry O'Brien came up through the Democratic Party. He was a top advisor to John F. Kennedy. He was sitting next to Jackie Kennedy on the plane back from Dallas when he was murdered. He was Bobby Kennedy's campaign manager when he was murdered. It was his office that was bugged during Watergate. So, he was hired by the NBA because the NBA had a number of political issues, and they wanted to and they had this gigantic antitrust lawsuit that was going on with the Oscar Robertson case. And so when he came in, he basically was brought in to be a deal maker, and that was what he did. He made a deal with the union. He made a deal with CBS. He made a deal with Congress, all of these different things to merge the leagues. So by the time we're at these negotiations in 1982, he's not as central. In some minds, the belief is that he had kind of served his purpose by that point, and David Stern is kind of rising. But Larry O'Brien, the first chapter of the book is called No Final Victories. That was the name of his book, and that was his basic philosophy, which is, there's no final victories in negotiations, in sports, in anything. You sit down, you work out a deal, and then you come back again the next time.
As far as what I guess we can call it, what the modern NBA looks like today, if we go back to 1983, this is kind of when the players, it was a settlement, right? So we're talking about the players not necessarily getting infinite pay increases, but they're going to have a little bit more say in where they get to play. When you go back and you look at the negotiations between not only the league, but the players as well, what seemed to be the biggest sticking point in getting things worked out for the cap, Josh?
Well, so basically what happened was that the players had the players already had free agency, their salary, well, some degree of free agency. And the owners are saying, look, we're losing a tremendous amount of money. We have kind of these renegade owners. You have Ted Stepien in Cleveland. You have Donald Sterling in San Diego at the time before he went to L.A. And then you had a number of these old ABA franchises that were really hurting. And, the players said, look, we don't believe you. We don't accept this. You've told us every single time we don't believe you. And the owners opened up the books. They gave the players the audited financials. They actually showed them the economics of what was going on in the sport, which was unheard of before, and as far as I'm aware, somewhat unheard of since. Because Larry Fleischer, the head of the union, was a CPA and a tax lawyer, he was able to identify and understand those documents different than other people were. And so when they came back to negotiate and they tried to work it out, they were haggling. The owners wanted it implemented immediately. They wanted the players to get a lower percentage of the gross. They wanted to make it more difficult for players to move. And the players issued a strike date. They said, look, if we're willing to agree to this concept, but it has to be a more fair concept. They issued a strike date to coincide with the start of the playoffs, so it'd be tremendously damaging to the NBA. And basically, they got in a room and they worked out a deal where the players got what amounted to 53% of the revenue that came from the sport, but they got all revenue known or unknown, which was tremendously beneficial language. The owners had some degree of a salary cap, and that was basically the framework of the agreement that they made.
Again, Josh Mendelson, our guest right now, is the author of the new book called The Cap. Josh, it's definitely a very interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to diving in the book. I have now received a copy, so I'm looking forward to reading it. Before I let you go, I want you to go ahead and give us any details that maybe we have missed up to this point, maybe if there's a certain tidbit that you would like the listeners to know about, and of course, how you can find the book, The Cap.
Sure. There's a lot in this book. It's an incredibly rich and detailed history that I didn't know about. I think if you're interested in analytics, you'll like it. If you're interested in team building, you'll like it. If you're interested in history, you'll like it. If you've liked the player activism that you've seen from the players, that part about it as well. It's a fascinating story that we just don't know. And it's available everywhere. You can get it on Amazon or you can go to thecapbook.com and that has the links to where to get it and some reviews of the book and stuff too.
I definitely enjoyed the conversation. Best of luck with the book. And again, I appreciate you making time for us today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Again, that's Josh Mendelson. Pick up his new book, The Cap, How Larry Flasher and David Stern Built the Modern NBA. I have a copy in my hand right now. Looking forward to reading it. I think there's going to be some interesting stuff in this story. It's an opportunity to learn something new, and really it can paint you a picture as to where we're at today in the NBA. And we're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll talk NFL right after this. Week 4 now with the books. Doubleheader last night. The Kansas City Chiefs become the first team in NFL history to win back-to-back weeks on Monday night. And they top the Patriots. We get the Packers over the Falcons. How much longer does Dan Quinn have as head coach of the Atlanta Falcons? We'll talk about that and more when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
Salud. Salud.
Salud.
Grab your cups of beer, put them up, let's cheer, put them up, let's win. Here's a toast to never looking back again.
Time for one of my favorite segments here on Drive Time Sports. It's Cheers, brought to you by the Handy Martin Helper. Make sure you go check out their beer cave. Especially right now. I mean, you have baseball, football, basketball. You got everything you need. The Handy Martin Helper and their beer cave. This is the segment where I raise my glass to someone, something, just some aspect in the professional sports scene. And today, I'm going to raise my glass to Brian Flores, head coach of the Miami Dolphins. You know, when Brian Flores took over this gig, I thought the Dolphins had the least amount of talent in the NFL. They were on the clock. It was the tank for Tua, remember? Because Tua was going to be the number one pick. And the Dolphins were going to go 0-16. And then Flores was going to draft Tua. And the franchise was going to be saved. That was the thought last season at this time. Well, the Dolphins did not go 0-16. In fact, there were teams worse than the Miami Dolphins. There were four teams worse than the Dolphins. So they get the fifth pick overall. And still, they get their guy in Tua Tagovailoa. Joe Burrow, Chase Young, Jeff Okuda, Andrew Thomas, they all go above Tua. The Dolphins still get their guy, and that's after Brian Flores heavily overachieved in 2019. Now we're 4 weeks into the season, and Tua's a guy that has performed so well. He's won a national championship at Alabama. Again, there was all the hype around him, but Tua had some injury issues at Alabama. 4 games into the season, the Dolphins are 1-3. And there's been less than spectacular play from Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, just look at the numbers. He's completed 69% of his passes. Okay. 6 touchdowns. Not bad. 5 interceptions. Ouch. That's a problem. And you have Tua, a guy that has been hyped to be around this franchise for 2 years. Really, when you think about it. How often does that happen? How often do you see a quarterback? I guess now it's going to happen more and more frequently. Like we're doing it right now with Trevor Lawrence. There's a number of different places that Trevor Lawrence could end up. Tua, it was Tua and Miami. Those two names were attached even when Tua was playing for Alabama. The names were attached. That's what everybody wanted. The fans in Miami, I mean, they grew accustomed to hearing the Tua talk. Okay, so you have Brian Flores. He comes from the coaching tree of one of the greatest to ever do it, and Bill Belichick. He's done a phenomenal job. And he comes out today and he says he will not be pressured into playing Tua. But raise your glass to Brian Flores. Now, granted, his situation is a little bit different in Miami, and I understand that. Zach Taylor rolls with Joe Burrow from day one. It was to be expected. Okay. Justin Herbert with Anthony Lynn in Los Angeles. Tyrod Taylor is still the starter, if not for a freak injury. And when the time comes, I'm curious to see if Aylin goes back to Tyrod Taylor, because I don't think he will. I think Herbert has proven that he could play. He can play at a very high level. And so we may be doing a cheer segment to Anthony Lynn here in a couple of weeks. So I understand that Brian Flores' situation is different, but this guy's job is super safe. It's not on the line, and I feel like when coaches have their job on the line, when they feel like they're on the hot seat, they will keep a rookie quarterback in their back pocket to tell the organization, look, you got to give me time. Right, Brian Flores knows he has all the time in the world. He's not rushing Tua. It was 11 months ago that Tua suffered a hip injury. Flores is not interested in what the media has to say. I don't think he's interested in what the front office has to say. Now, I think we will see Tua within the next couple of weeks. I give it a couple of weeks and we'll see Tua. But I love Brian Flores' comments. He's not going to be pressured. He's made that perfectly clear. And Chan Gailey steps up today, the offensive coordinator for the Dolphins. He steps up and he says that a lot of the red zone problems, it hasn't been Fitzpatrick's fault. It's been his fault. So he's taking credibility for it as well. I just love the direction the Miami Dolphins are heading in. And as far as, is it right to play a quarterback out of the gate, or should you sit him? And I think for the longest time, we had the mindset of, if you rush a quarterback, it's too soon, it's going to ruin him. Look, I can throw scenarios out there every which way to prove one point or the other correct. Like, if you want to talk about quarterbacks who set, Aaron Rodgers set for 3 seasons. I mean, that's lengthy. You want to talk about patience? That wouldn't happen in today's game. I'm telling you, in an agent-driven world, there's no way a first-round draft pick is going to sit on the bench for 3 years, especially when you have a 5-year rookie skill contract. That's not happening. Okay, so Aaron Rodgers sits for 3 years. Yeah, that's been a massive success, one of the greatest talents we've ever seen at quarterback. Phillip Rivers, it was a huge success. In fact, Phillip Rivers was basically a third-string quarterback when he was with the Chargers. They had patience. It paid off. Alex Smith, that was a success. I mean, you can go down the list. There's a great deal of success for quarterbacks that set. On the flip side, there's a lot of success for quarterbacks who started right away. Cam Newton started from day one in Carolina. Blew everybody's expectations out of the water. Andrew Luck, day one success. RG3, same draft class, was a success for one season, was not a success moving forward. Russell Wilson, day one success. Remember, Russell Wilson was supposed to be the backup to Matt Flynn. Seahawks threw a lot of money at Matt Flynn. Wilson takes over, never looked back. I'm going to say that Jared Goff, while it wasn't a success right out of the gate, made a smooth transition to a new head coach. Worked. He's been the starter ever since. It's worked out. Carson Wentz, it's worked out. You know, you go back and you can look at players like Brady Quinn, Jamarcus Russell. It didn't work out. Vince Young, it didn't work out. So I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer. This is where you have to rely on your coach. You got to lean on your coach to make this call. And I love the fact that Brian Flores, he doesn't care if they're 1-3. And this is hard for fans to swallow. The Miami Dolphins are not supposed to be good this season. They're not supposed to be. Brian Flores knows this. They could go 1-15. It doesn't matter. Look, as far as draft capital goes, it probably better suits the Dolphins to not be good this season. And you hate to hear that. I know you hate to hear that. But it probably suits them better knowing that they hold first-round picks from first and second-round pick from the Houston Texans as well as their own. They have draft capital galore. There is no reason to rush to a Tagovailoa. So cheers to Brian Flores, head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Again, that segment brought to you by the Handymart Inn Helper. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, let's get back to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on 750 AM, KOAL.
Playoff baseball continuing right now. We're going to shoot out between the A's and the Astros. Seventh frame of this one, Houston up 5-2. And Travis, really, when you look at this series, it just seems like Houston is figuring things out at the right time. A lot of talent on this team. I mean, maybe we discounted everything that they had too soon. With Verlander going down, it doesn't matter if you're going to score 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 runs a game. Really, you put yourself in a position to win day in and day out. Maybe we did not give this Astros team enough credit.
I think you and I talked about it, what, a couple of weeks ago when we made these picks, that we thought this team was either going to go out in the first round or maybe they catch fire and they do something crazy.
Yeah, because they're capable of it.
Yeah, and they are, because that lineup is so good that it can mask the, you know, abilities of the, you know, that pitching staff. So that's what's happening right now. I mean, they're hitting long home runs, long balls, they're getting on base, and they're scoring runs, and that's a recipe to advance in the playoffs.
Yeah, there's no doubt, and it could set up, and I don't want to jump too far ahead, but if you get the Yankees and the Astros in the ALCS,
yeah, give me it.
Well, we could be looking at I don't want it, and the reason I don't want it is because I'm not a huge fan of offense. I love defense. We're looking at 12-10 type baseball games night in and night out, except when Garrett Cole and Zach Greinke pitch. It's going to be a weird... If we get that, it's a weird series. Now, a lot still has to happen, but the Astros are well in control of this set with the A's, and if the Yankees get a win over the Rays tonight, I think the Rays and the A's are, in my mind, they were the two best teams in the American League. They deserve the 1 and 2 rankings, but right now, yeah, there's something to be worried about if you're a Rays or A's fan.
Yeah, it was one inning last night. They got the Rays. That's it. They took the lead, and then they come back the next inning, give up back-to-back home runs, and that ninth inning got away from them. So it's going to be a long series. Can't count the Rays out. They're the one seed for a reason.
Yeah, good point. Atlanta again topping Miami today, 9-5 at a showdown, 6-10 tonight, Yankees-Rays. And then at 7:30, we get the Dodgers and the Padres. Clevinger will be on the mound for San Diego. This is so interesting to me because Mike Clevinger was a name that was floated around the deadline last year. He stayed put. Finally, the Indians move him, and he ends up going to San Diego. And the Dodgers were a team that were rumored to be in the running for Clevinger for a long time, and they didn't get him. Now, I think you can look at this one of two ways in tonight's game. For instance, Clevinger on the Padres could bite the Dodgers front office because they were being rather cheap with their laundry list of prospects. But Clevinger also hasn't pitched in a couple of weeks, and I wonder if he's a detriment to San Diego. Tingler, you probably could question Tingler going with him tonight in Game 1.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't go with him Game 1 because he hasn't pitched, like you said, in a few weeks. And I think the Dodgers get after him early. It's going to be a short night for him. I think the Dodgers can get to him, you know, in those first couple innings. He might not last three innings.
Well, if he's clean through four, I don't know if he comes out for the fifth.
Yeah, you can't rush that guy back like that. You can't, because it's such a long postseason. You're going to need him for another start if it goes that far. So they get five innings out of him and then get to that bullpen. Kudos to the Padres, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah, playoff baseball, it's going to continue tonight. Let's take a look at what's happening in the NFL. We have a few more minutes on this particular segment. And Travis, last night we have doubleheader Monday night games. I don't want to get into the idea of having two Monday night games instead of a Thursday night game. I love the Thursday night games. It sets up the week.
We don't need two Monday night games.
No, we don't need two Monday night games. No, we do not. But now the undefeated teams have dwindled. We are now down to four in the AFC, one in each division: Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, Kansas City. And in the NFC, we're down to the Packers, and we're down to the Seahawks. It's the best team in the NFC.
Packers.
I agree.
Aaron Rodgers, the MVP. Packers are the best team in the NFC.
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that right now the two best quarterbacks in the NFC are 4-0.
No,
because
it's not.
Aaron Rodgers has been phenomenal, and so has Russell Wilson.
Yeah, what Green Bay is doing is... The best thing I think that Green Bay did was draft Jordan Love and, you know, piss Aaron Rodgers off, I guess.
Yeah, because they have.
Because they didn't, you know, offensively, they didn't draft anybody, you know, to help him. And they ticked that guy off, and he's come out. He's got 13 touchdowns and no picks.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting, at least from at this stage in the game, what's so interesting to me with Green Bay, and you mentioned the lack of weapons. First off, Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, they may very easily be the best 1-2 punch on the ground in the league. So Aaron Rodgers does have a potent rushing attack behind him. He's got two capable guys. But when you take a look at the different weapons that he has had to use through the air, I mean, if it's MVS, well, MVS didn't do a whole lot last night, right?
No.
Alan Lazard had a breakout game last week. Now he's out indefinitely. Davante Adams hasn't played over the last 2 weeks. One of the top receivers in the NFL. Last night it was a freaking tight end that Aaron Rodgers ripped things up with. See, he's doing it with so many different weapons, but Matt LaFleur is a true quarterback coach.
He's a stud.
He's a quarterback coach, and he's made life easy on Aaron Rodgers with a potent 1-2 punch on the ground. And as far as Seattle goes, I don't discredit anything with the Seahawks team one bit. I think they're very good. I believe they're the best team in the NFC West. But I like what Green Bay can do on the ground.
Yeah, defensively, you can get after Seattle. You can score points on them. So you're going to be in shootouts with Seattle. And in the long run, I just don't think you can win that way.
Look, you give a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers a rushing attack where Aaron Jones is averaging close to 6 yards per carry and Jamal Williams is close to 4 yards per carry. You give a guy like Aaron Rodgers that type of weapon on the ground, and great things are going to happen. The fact of the matter is he's been sacked 3 times this year. He's completed over 70% of his passes. His touchdown to interception ratio is 13-0.
Yeah, he's a stud.
And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they have built this team to have success on the ground. I'm telling you, best 1-2 punch in the game right now.
There's not one better.
They have it.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. That's why Green Bay's 1, Seattle's probably 2 in the NFC.
Let's break for just a moment. We'll come back. Final touches on this show when we return, bouncing all over the place. One of those days where 1 hour is just not enough. More Drive Time Sports will end with Game 4 of the NBA Finals right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Back to close out this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. Bouncing all over the place today. We'll end with NBA basketball. If the Heat find a way to top the Lakers in Game 4 tonight, we have a series. Otherwise, I believe the season is over on Friday. I will be surprised if the Heat get a win tonight, even though Bam Adebayo will return. And now they're saying that Goran Dragic will, in fact, warm up. I don't think Dragic goes. I mean, a torn plantar fasciitis. It's about a 4 to 6 week healing time. Look, if he goes and he's effective, the guy is tough as nails. And I know people are talking about the Heat culture, and I get it. It's a real thing. It exists.
I hate it. I think it's stupid. But
the Heat culture?
I don't like Heat
culture.
It's real.
You can't deny it. You really don't think it's a real thing?
Heat culture? I don't buy into it.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing. Look, Pat Riley, for one, lost the greatest player in the world at that time, LeBron James, and they never tanked.
You could argue that he's the greatest player in their franchise history.
Yeah, you probably could. There's no doubt. And they didn't tank. I mean, this is a team that managed to stay semi-competitive. Even this last offseason, like, we've had plenty of discussions about how people put down the Lakers and said this team wouldn't make the playoffs. There were similar jokes going on when the Heat signed Jimmy Butler.
That's a hell of a signing, and I don't know why people, you know, they just read too much into the media that things people put out there about Jimmy Butler being this bad guy. But
he was never a bad guy.
But if you talk to teammates, and besides Karl Anthony Towns, but other than that, people say he's awesome. And people just, you know, they buy into he's this bad team. He's not. He's a great teammate. And look what he's done. They followed his lead in Game 3. That's why they won Game 3.
Heat culture is a real thing. It's a real thing. I don't believe Heat culture gets a win tonight because on the opposition, you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Who wins tonight?
The Lakers by 10.
Yeah, I'll take the Lakers as well. We'll talk about that tomorrow on the show. We'll also catch up with head coach John Famala with the Emory Spartan football team. There's so much to get into, including playoff baseball. That's coming up here on Drive Time Sports tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.